When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome back to the Hi-Lo. This is episode 4, Not Too Poor.
Is that Cockney rhyming slang, Pandora?
It is. This is our fourth episode of the Hi-Lo. Those devoted listeners who have checked in before will know that this is a podcast brought to you by me, Pandora Sykes, and her, Dolly Alderton, where we talk about all things highbrow and lowbrow that have been happening across the world in the last week.
What's your favourite highbrow thing and lowbrow thing? And be boasty.
Be boasty.
Be boasty with the highbrow and be ruthlessly honest with the lowbrow.
Okay, I think the highbrow thing would just have to be something I read. So maybe it would be...
Tolstoy.
No.
James Joyce.
No. I was going to say like The Atlantic or The New Yorker. Something long form. And lowbrow, it would probably be Dance Moms.
What's Dance Moms?
Dance Mums, but I'm saying it in an American accent.
But what is it?
It's the mother of child dancers.
That's screaming bravo
on
to me.
Five,
TLC.
Five star or something.
Right,
Home and Away's on
one.
It. That's how I met Dance Mums, just because I like to watch
Home and Away
sometimes.
Away.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you? What's your highbrow? What's your lowbrow?
Highbrow, I would say the critical theory of Roland Barthes. Lowbrow, watching old episodes of Stars in Their Eyes on YouTube.
Can't do
I think I can go lower than that, actually. The Hairy Bikers cookery programmes. Chip sandwiches. Cheesy chips.
Oh my God, if on the subject of food, you
know
I'll
win. Fish finger sandwiches.
Monster Munch.
Oh, I love Monster Munch. Don't you think that Monster Munch
so
would be very clever to sell the pickled onion dust on its own separately? Just have a little sprinkle.
I never eat the pickled onion ones. I eat roast beef.
There we are.
They do extraordinary things to your stomach, though. That's all I'm saying. Let's move on. What have we been up to this week?
So, in the interest of full disclosure, as you've probably gathered from the preamble, the Hi-Lo's feeling pretty tired this week.
We are. We've been working very hard.
Yeah,
we're
too
feeling
much
a bit weary. So those of you that listened to last week's episode will know that Dolly was watching Love on Netflix and didn't think I'd like it. Now, I have roared through two seasons in the last week. Sunday, I watched the whole of series two, and I absolutely love Love. So, Dolly, you're quite wrong. I wish I'd written it. Dolly was like, it's not that good. Dolly did a vault fast, which is our listeners of last week will know she did then as well.
I like Love.
I love Love.
I just don't believe them as a couple, Pandora. Do you?
Semi. I was just more interested in how much it revealed about modern life, everything from...
And I love the LA backdrop
texting
as well.
Texting to sex to just the whole... There were so many clever insights, I think, into what dating is about in like 2017 and what it's like to be a man, what it's like to be a woman. And
I love how they deal with addiction as well. I think that's something that they do. It's very sophisticated how they explore that.
She's very hard on him anytime he tries to do something nice and she's like, fuck you, you condescending asshole.
Well, that's why I just find them so unlikable and I find him so needy and spineless and people-pleasing. I actually think the reason I don't like it is I'm confronted in both of those characters as the worst bits of myself.
I was about to say, do either of them remind you of that?
But they both remind me of me. He is spineless, people-pleasy, bit of a nerd, bit annoying. She is self-obsessed, drinks too much, rude.
Hot though, Dolly. She's really hot.
Yeah, well, obviously I identify with that very heavily.
Anyway, I really like that. Next on my list is Big Little Lies. I've been
What's
hearing
that?
Amazing stuff about it. It's on Sky Atlantic, so I don't know if I can catch up with it. I think it's on the second series. It's got Reese Witherspoon in it and another really famous person. It's like a seriously star-studded cast, a TV show. Been hearing great things about that, so that's next on my list. I have been speaking to a load of teenagers. I was writing a piece for my website about how fake news has affected Generation Z, that's the generation below us, and their attitude to social media and to truth versus opinion. And I spoke to loads of teenagers, and it was really interesting. It's one of my favourite things I've written in a long time. So a bit of self-promo. If you want to check it out, you can go to my website. And that's basically what I've been doing this week, watching Love and writing that piece and hanging out with my parents, which is always hilarious.
I've got a bit of news.
Yeah, what's your news?
So today, Pandora, is World Poetry Day.
Oh, yes. Yes, okay.
So I thought it'd be nice if we each read a poem, which we did for each other when we went away, if you remember.
I don't remember that.
Well, I read you a poem and you read me the fucking lyrics of that fucking Patricia the Stripper.
Oh my God.
That you were obsessed with.
And with a swing of her hips. Okay, you read out your favourite poem and I'm going to write you one.
Okay, but as long as it's not rude. It will be rude, won't it? Okay, I'm going to read On Waterloo Bridge by Wendy Cope.
Great.
On Waterloo Bridge, where we said our goodbyes, the weather conditions... I can hear you scribbling.
I'm writing a poem.
The weather conditions bring tears to my eyes. I wipe them away with a black woolly glove and try not to notice I've fallen in love. On Waterloo Bridge, I am trying to think. This is nothing. You're high on the charm and the drink. But the jukebox inside me is playing a song that says something different. And when was it wrong? On Waterloo Bridge, with the wind in my hair, I am tempted to skip. You're a fool. I don't care. The head does its best, but the heart is the boss. I admit it before I am halfway across.
Very nice.
Right, now read your dirty little limerick.
Hold on.
Are you still writing it?
Dolly, I started writing 30 seconds ago. Okay.
Go on. It's going to be rude.
Just add a few lines there. Okay.
It's like on Countdown.
There once was a girl named Dolly.
Oh, Jesus. Go on.
There once was a girl named Dolly who was capable of tremendous folly. She took off her knickers with her eyes all of a flicker and downed a bottle of Bolly. Quite good in like 20 seconds.
Isn't it? It's fairly accurate. Description of my Saturday night, which I would like to speak to you about.
Oh, yes. Do tell me.
I have... You know how when you're in your early 20s and people who are in their 30s say to you, you don't know what a hangover is until you're 30?
I'm realising that having turned 30, it has been the seismic shift in my life. I'm realising that everything that everyone ever said to me is true.
What does that mean?
It means that every time people said, when you're my age, I was like, yo,
How so?
Well, I am completely confounded by exactly the same societal pressures, freakouts, whether it's about like pensions, to getting older, to like caring about your body. I've really noticed the manifestations of all these things in my mind have really changed since that big
birthday.
You
won't like this question. You'll think I'm being flippant, but it's just from other things people have said to me when they turn 30. Do you feel different in your body?
I feel a bit different.
Do you feel more tired?
I feel like I've felt really tired for like the last year. I really genuinely feel in the last few weeks I've done I want to work really hard and I want to earn money and I want to have a family and these are the things I care about in life and I haven't got any time for X, Y, Z.
Well, that
feels really nice.
That will be why you're more tired. It's not your body changing. It's that you're probably just more focused and working harder, probably.
I don't know. There's been a few examples in the last few weeks. There's been stuff that I feel like I really would have worried about. And because I've had all these decisions, which may fade away by the time I'm 31, because I've had all these decisions in my mind, I feel a bit like, I'm not going to bother thinking about that right now. I'm busy on this. Let's see if it lasts. I've never managed to be one of those people. It'd be nice if it is. It'd be nice if I sort of suddenly realised the really important things in life. Anyway, tell me about your Saturday night.
Well, so I went out. It was one of my best friends, Sabrina's birthdays this
week. I don't think you Instagrammed enough.
Well, Sabrina is known amongst our group of friends. I mean, I hope she gets married, sort of dreading it, because her birthday...
Oh, what, you'll have seven hens?
Yeah, the birthday...
My friend Lucy had two,
which
was quite a lot.
Birthday week, weekend for... It's never been a day for all the time I've known her, but that's fine. We enjoy celebrating it. Friday evening, we went to a lovely French restaurant in Soho, and we had a lovely private room.
Where did you go?
L'Escargot.
It's one of my favourite restaurants.
It's divine.
Yeah, I did a thing for Matches Fashion about my favourite things in London.
Oh, I read that,
and I had
my
picture taken there the other day. I love it. Ollie and I had one of the worst arguments of our life there, but we still loved dinner, which is testament to how great... do you know what I mean? On balance, it still was really great.
Yeah, I've had so many meals ruined at lovely restaurants.
You had a private room. Here, I'm going to give you that so you can frame it.
I've just been handed the dirty limerick. Thank you, my darling. So we went to this private room. There are about 8 of our best friends. It was lovely. But the problem with having a private room, and because we were drinking so much...
The problem with having a private room by Dolly Alderton, a short story of privilege.
No, the problem of having a private room in a restaurant when it's a load of sort of... I don't want to say ladettes, but women who like drinking. It got a bit Bullingdon Club.
Who was pinned under a snooker cue? The waiter.
It felt like it was going in that direction. And then we were so hungover. We had her actual party on the Saturday. And none of us could sort of stand. We were so hungover. And I just noticed that every single one of us now can't do hangover.
2 nights in a row.
No, we can't do 2 nights in a row. And also...
I don't actually do 2 nights in a row, I've just realised.
No, I can't do it. And also my body now, I nearly always vomit the next day.
Wow.
Which I never had in all of my 20s until now. Also, I had a hangover yesterday as well, so the hangover now lasts 3 days. I only felt normal
May
again
I point
this
out that this is why you started magical drinking?
I'm going to have to go back to magical drinking.
So do you want to explain what magical drinking is?
The year of magical drinking is a very funny little literary joke. A play on words from Joan Didion's memoir, The Year of Magical Thinking, which is actually a very serious book. I was trying to cut down on my drinking about a year ago. So I said, there must be a way in which you can drink in moderation so you still have fun, you still feel a bit loosened, but you don't wake up, doesn't cripple you the next day, because I now just cannot write even a sentence when I'm hungover.
Such a uniquely British thing as well. Every other country's managed to enjoy alcohol.
I know, we have to find a method. So I started this thing called The Year of Magical Drinking, which is...
You did it
for
ages!
...much more grandiose than... Basically, it's just having 3 drinks and making 3 drinks last over the course of an evening.
And your theory was anything after 3... And they have to be normal drinks, so they can't be... If those 3 drinks are wine, if they are large glasses of wine, that counts more like 5 and you're...
Yeah.
It's got to be 3.
I think I need to go
drinks.
Back to it. Do you still do it?
I never did magical drinking.
Oh, I thought you did magical drinking.
I just drink quite slowly.
Yeah, I just knock it back. Speaking of which.
Oh, yes. Miraval. Okay, so I think that people who drink Miraval are in a bit of a cult, and I'm in that cult. And if you're not in that cult, you might not know what Miraval is, but it is basically Brangelina's rosé. It's not cheap. It's £19.50 a bottle, so I don't indulge in it all the time, but it is, in my extensive rosé drinking experience, and I do have extensive experience, I drink rosé all year round. Yes, you heard me, all year round. So since Brangelina announced that they were getting divorced and, you know, everything went Pete Tong, I've been quite worried about Miraval. I haven't said anything out loud because I didn't want to jinx it. Anyway, I can finally breathe a sigh of relief because...
Thank God.
Thank God. And I actually tweeted saying, thank God, rosé lovers, you know, you can step down. But Miraval is going to carry on. The vineyard is still producing its delicious Miraval wine. It is apparently an investment for Brangelina's children. But it got me to thinking... Carrie Bradshaw, it got me to thinking about booze loyalists. Now, I am very loyal to Miraval. Dolly, what are you loyal to?
Something happens in the middle of your 20s where at the beginning you only drink Blossom Hill or Jacob's Creek, and then you get to about 27 and you just think, oh, I can't really go on like this, can I? So everyone switches to Oyster Bay. So now Oyster Bay is just all I drink. Oyster Bay says, I sort of appreciate you cooking dinner for me, definitely more than a bottle of Foot of Africa, but I don't appreciate it quite enough.
Do you mean Barefoot?
No, there's one called Foot of Africa that I used to buy from the Nisa local in
there's
Camden,
one with the loveliest labels. And I went to my best friend Lucy's house for dinner the other day and I bought one, and it's got this gorgeous label on it, and it doesn't taste too bad, but it is only £5. And
oh.
I wondered if anyone would bust me, and everyone had bought the same.
Oh, really?
And she wasn't even offended because she was like, it's so great, we can all pretend it's actually about £15 because it looks like it is. And obviously,
can you find
none
out the name of
that,
because I could do with that.
Yes, I will find out from her. It's got like a really lovely illustration of like a piggy on it, I think. Let me find out.
Can I talk about the last time I drank old Miraval, whatever it's called?
Miraval. Yeah, you can talk about Miraval.
So listeners of the Pandolly podcast might remember the rather fuzzy episode we did, which was the Christmas special that was a bit booze-filled. And afterwards, this is a...
afterwards, Pandolly died.
Director's commentary. Afterwards, Pandora and I carried on drinking in the studio with our producer, Dave. And then we proceeded to steal, it wasn't our finest hour, 2 giant cardboard cutouts...
Borrow.
..of footballers from the Sun's football podcast
Borrow.
Office. And then we took them with us out of the news building. I went to Notting Hill with Pandora. We took them into a KFC. And then we went into an Oddbins and bought this rosé. And then we drank all of it. And then I left Pandora's flat at 2 a.m. to go on a date.
I think I'd already gone to bed. I think I left you and Ollie talking.
Yeah, my husband, Pandora's husband, was shooting
husband
the
came
shit,
back,
drinking that rosé.
And me and Ollie just did a tag team, and he was like, I'll take over from here.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
This immutable force never leaving our kitchen.
Anyway, so I don't feel any...
You don't feel any desire to go back to Miraval.
Okay, no, it was very delicious, that rosé.
Speaking of customer loyalty, there has been outrage. Yes, more middle-class outrage on the high-low. Fancy that. There has been absolute outrage that Waitrose are not offering free coffees anymore. Now, I know so many people who go to Waitrose every morning just to get their free coffee, and I can't really understand why Waitrose were doing it for as long as they could. Mm. You just walked in, got your free coffee, and went out again. As my flatmate did for 2 years. Anyway, now you have to buy something in order to get the free coffee. And as I said, it's mayhem. It's carnage.
Well, I think fair's fair.
What, you think they should have to buy something to get a free coffee?
Yeah. How do you feel about, especially as a journalist, I'm interested about freebie culture?
I love how obsessed people are with freebies. I think as we become more consumerist and more obsessed with stuff, the more people want, like, free stuff. And it doesn't even matter what it is. I was reading this piece in Cosmo this month with Kate Wills. It's kind of about the sharing economy, and you know, there's a real increase on all kind of pitting into the sense of community, the idea of community coming back. Mm. And there was this website where you could basically pick up free stuff so it didn't go to waste. And she had listed some stuff. I think she listed like half a wheel of cheese, and it hadn't gone. And she was like, how has my cheese not gone when a pair of leggings with a hole in the crotch that has been sewn up have gone, and an old dead bonsai tree? And I was just obsessed that you've got to read that article, actually. Anyway, so really enjoyed that. One man's trash being another man's treasure. But also, how often do you hear people go, oh, I'll take that if it's free. 80-year-old man, and it's like a Christmas decoration. It's July. I'll take that if it's free. Is that going begging? If it's going begging, that expression.
It's a nightmare with flatmates when you live with two women. Because
what,
we
is that
do about once a week, one of us, we have this system where we have some old shitty piece of clothing that we never wear anymore, and we put it in the hallway, and it's sort of just the first come, first serve. And everyone does the rounds on it. And no one ever really wants to throw it out because it's free. But you end up... Like, I've got so many of Belle's old clothes that I just never wear.
Tim's a charity shop. I'm there all the time.
I know, but it's just because you have this intrinsic greed, I think, of, like, if something's free, you need to get it.
Yeah, I think there is that thing. And it was really funny when I worked at Style. There was, like, this big box that everyone would just chuck anything into when they got sent it and they didn't want it. And they, you know, couldn't re-gift it to a family member. And some of the stuff in that... I used to go, my God, I can't put this in there. Who's going to take this? And a girl I worked with was like, you would be surprised.
Someone will always take
and she
it.
Told me the story about how before I'd got there, someone had got sent like a pink monogrammed mini suitcase, and this guy from like the news desk who was like 50 was like, is anyone taking this? No. And just sort of shut it up and wheeled it. Can I take it now? Is it ready to go? Excellent.
Enough that.
I've had a real kind of re-evaluation about freebies, and actually I think it's because I've always been a really big purger. Like, I don't like clutter. Mm. I don't like having stuff unless there's a purpose for it, so I don't like getting sent stuff that I know I'll never use. So now actually I'm in the very lucky position where I do get sent things. Mm. You know, I get sent lots of clothes, which is really, really spoiling. Now I will always ask to see a picture of something before they send it.
Yeah, that's
because
good.
You know, these might be brands with small budgets.
Exactly.
And I do give stuff to friends a lot. They always have lovely birthday presents, as do my sisters.
Yes,
but it's
we
really
do.
Funny now. My sisters go through it and they're like, is this free? And I'm like, yeah, but the man hours it took to assemble the free stuff. I could charge you for it, okay? You're ungrateful. No, they're very grateful. But so I'll say, I don't think it's my style, or I'm not going to wear it, so please don't waste something on send it to me. Because I do think there's quite a rank attitude. I know a lot of people who don't give stuff to charity, don't send stuff
back.
And
it can be very grabby,
I think. And I think the way that consumerism is changing now, this whole idea, oh, you know, people are spending much less on traditional advertising. There's a lot more kind of digital, native advertising, all that kind of thing. So sending someone something, then wearing it, or then posting about it, that's really pervasive now. And, you know, that's why you get loads of, like, teenagers who are like, when I grow up, I want to be on Made in Chelsea or something like that, because they just want to get sent free shit. Mm. So freebies, yes, I'm lucky to get some, but I am quite conscious.
Yes.
Very conscious and thoughtful, I suppose, about my acquisition. What about you?
Well, I never...
You love a good notebook.
It's quite new to me, actually, because I never worked staff on a magazine or a paper, so I never got all those invites, all those freebies, all those presents, or, you know, those products. And I've started getting more of them in the last couple of years. And something that I really noticed about myself, how how quickly entitlement happens. So when I first started getting things, I would be so grateful and I would really treasure the stuff. And I'm like, oh, how lucky am I? And then I started just getting a bit more like, oh, yeah, well,
only got 40 presents.
Exactly.
This week.
Well, sort of. And so I decided to make a conscious decision that, because it is a great privilege to get free stuff,
oh,
and it is
God,
fun, and it is a treat,
it is.
And it's lovely. And actually, you should only ever think of that as nothing you're entitled to, but just a very fun bonus. So in my head now, what I do is I always give half of what I'm given away, either to my flatmates or my mum.
Oh, God, yeah. It really annoys me when people don't ever give anything to charity. I do a lot of clothing sales, actually.
Yeah, that's a
lovely
idea.
And a lot of it is stuff that I've bought, which is why I don't give 100% to charity, because I can't really afford to.
Yeah.
But I'll always give a percentage to charity. I'm down me Oxfam all the time. We should absolutely be doing it. It does annoy me, though, when people are like, oh my God, like, why are you getting that stuff free? And I wasn't just turning around and be like, what's the like salary in your industry? Like, Dawn Porter was talking about it actually on her podcast, Get It On. She interviewed Polly Vernon. Polly Vernon is really honest about her life experience, which is great, whether or not it's exercising to stay skinny. She's like, yeah, I am skinny and I exercise to stay the skinny and I work really hard at it, you know, which I think is unusual. There's that really annoying thing amongst women about being like, oh, this is just naturally my body type. If it is, great, but
no,
often it's not. Often it's not. Yeah, she's very transparent and she's transparent about getting sent lovely things. And Dawn was saying, you know, it's such a great thing, but kind of I'm not going to feel guilty about it. When a brand, she said that she lost her makeup bag the other day and someone sent her a new one and she Instagrammed or tweeted saying, oh, thank you so much to the brand that sent me this.
I think it's gratitude as well. I always send a thank you
But she said that lots of people were like, I lost my makeup bag, why didn't I get one? And what she said, which is a really fair point, is she said, listen, I have a brand. I have, you know, she's got like 300,000 followers on Twitter. She said, I have a brand and they are sending me stuff because they are a brand
it's
and they
exchange.
Want my brand to promote it. It's the way it works. It's the way professional relationships work. And she was quite sort of a bit like, I felt like she was like, I'm not going to apologise for this. This is where I'm at in my industry and you probably have different areas of where you're at in your industry. That said, I think, you know, we are at this quite rank point where I can't even imagine the kind of stuff that, like, the Kardashians get sent. I hope all of you have perks within your industry.
Yes, I agree.
That would be my parting shot on that.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We're going to talk again about memes, but very briefly, don't worry. So for anyone who listened last week, they'll know how incredibly obsessed, not just we are, it went way more mental since the podcast, incredibly obsessed the world was with Professor Kelly, BBC pundit dad meme. The interesting thing is, since we talked about it last week, Marion, the
breakout
4-year-old,
star.
She has been the breakout star. If I was him, I might feel a little bit uncomfortable about the fact that you put in Marion Kelly into Google and there's like reams and reams of articles about an unknown 4-year-old. Anyway, so that meme took off. I think it's now into sort of 100 million views.
A meme that I've really enjoyed this week that's been talk of the Twitter town is Meryl Streep screaming, bellowing. And that's become a meme unto itself.
So it's an archive picture of her from the 2015 SAG Awards. And she's cupping her mouth and she's screaming something to someone. And anyway, it's been co-opted by like a million different people. Words been put into her mouth. It's that Kelly song, is it? Like, can I get a ooh, ooh, can I get a ee?
It's just any sort of response.
So it's anything,
callback.
Yeah, it's anything response has been put in there. And I particularly enjoyed it because I am writing a piece about memes and the kind of cultural phenomenon of the meme. And I love that every week there's a new one. And in fact, on that subject, I'm doing a hell of a lot of field research for this piece. If you can think of any iconic memes, please can you tweet me? Not the high-low. The high-low's not writing it, I am.
No, I'd love to. Please do tweet the high-low. I'd love to read about them. You reminded me of the original meme.
So the original meme is meant to be one from 1996, which is the baby dancing. That's slightly
the
creepy.
Ali McBeal.
That's how it goes.
It is the dancing
it
baby.
It dances to...
Oh, yeah.
I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me.
From memes to Theresa May.
Our Prime Minister, Theresa May, has done an interview this week with American Vogue, and there's been a lot of commentary on it.
Thank God, you specified that she was our Prime Minister, Theresa May, not our friend Theresa May. So it was revealed in January that Theresa May would be doing the April issue of US Vogue. And there was a lot of talk about her doing it to get into bed with Trump, XYZ. I think it was actually just to do with global PR. I think she did a big piece with the Sunday Times magazine with Eleanor Mills over here. And I think she probably wanted to do a profile over there. Anne Perkins wrote a piece for The Guardian in January where she kind of spoke about Theresa May possibly becoming a woman known for ill-timed choices, whether or not it be wearing a pair of chocolate brown leather trousers for £1,000 or, you know, going and doing US Vogue when there's all of the Trump Ferrari. It was actually a really interesting piece because she actually kind of does, you think it's going all one way, and then she's like, but actually, hold up here, you know, let's think logically. And in it she says, British fashion is big business and the US is a big market. That is at least part of the reason why American Vogue's British editor Anna Wintour was made a dame in the New York Honours. Fashion is on trend. The world has got serious about politics. Last month, Teen Vogue had a smash hit with a blistering leader about Donald Trump gaslighting the country, which far outstripped the second most read feature ever, the right way to apply glitter nail polish. So what she's saying is that fashion has become very political, and so by extension using the industry of fashion as a medium to discuss politics as a filter through which it can kind of translate to the reader is actually not as nutty a decision as it seems, because there's never been more fashion and politics commentary in my lifetime, I feel like, than there is right now. You know, I've never talked so much about it, I've never written so much about it. And Dolly, tell us a little bit about the American Vogue interview.
Well, then. It didn't shy away from the issue. Obviously, it was for American Vogue, so it didn't shy away. It was a full profile, and I have to say, I'm not a fan of Theresa May, but I think she came across very well, and it was a very well-written profile. But the interview didn't shy away from the issue of Theresa May's wardrobe, which has had a huge amount of airtime over the years, even before she became Prime Minister.
Her shoes.
Do you remember the little bodycon strapless dress?
Love her little shoes.
The interviewer, Gabby Wood, wrote, "One of the minor freedoms May has sought to protect herself is the ability to wear the clothes she likes. She has no style advisors and shops in a boutique in Henley, a town near her constituency known for its regatta." I mean, of course.
Have you been
there?
Have you been to the regatta?
No, but I've been to Henley, and that does not surprise me at all. Though she often wears the British designer Amanda Wakely and has a new coat by the young South East London-based Daniel Blake. She doesn't feel the need to restrict herself to British brands. She grumbles a little over the fact that when she wears something more than once, journalists describe it as recycled. There aren't many people who buy things to wear only once, she says. The interviewer also brought up the famous brown leather trousers that cost nearly £1,000 that our Prime Minister wore in an interview in which she ironically was meant to be speaking about families who are just about managing jams. And Gabby Wood said, "When I asked if this surprised her, May makes a dismissive sound. Pfft," she says. "Look, throughout my political career, people have commented on what I wear. That's just something that happens and you accept that. But it doesn't stop me from going out and enjoying fashion. And I also think it's important to be able to show that a woman can do a job like this and still be interested in clothes."
Well, you know that that's something that I am particularly passionate about. Interest and an investment in fashion does not negate your knowledge or your ability to transverse in other areas. You
absolutely
know, like another great example would be Amal Clooney. She can wear Gian Battista Vali couture to her wedding, but she's still having meetings
rights.
With, yeah, she's possibly the most influential human rights lawyer working in the world right now. You know, the conversation she's having with the UN about terrorism, about FGM, about, you know, these massive, massive subjects. And sure, on Twitter, there's always a, "Look what Amal Clooney wore to clothe her bump while out and about." And sometimes people reply going, "Look what Amal Clooney wore to have, you know, a world-defining summit at the UN." But I don't think, and I may be alone here, I don't think she should have felt guilty about spending £1,000 of her own money on a pair of leather trousers. It's her money to spend as she pleases.
People got so cross about the trousers, though.
Cross about the trousers.
I think people are still cross about the trousers.
Are you cross about the trousers?
I think it's maybe in slightly poor taste, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't... Do you know what? I just don't think they thought about it. I don't think she thought. They're not a particularly showy pair of trousers.
No,
I mean,
as in
trousers.
Talking about that subject and wearing clothes. But what it does is it just basically shows... It doesn't do her any favours because it shows a disconnect between her and her people. That's what the problem is. I think it's across the board with MPs. I remember with Ed Miliband, there was outrage about his whole having two kitchens thing. So I don't think it's a gendered issue.
I think it is a gendered issue. I was reading something where someone pointed out, when was the last time that any senior politician, including Cameron or Obama, got asked where their suit was from and how much it cost? Every single suit that David Cameron wore would have cost more than her leather trousers.
I suppose.
Every single one, probably $4,000 or $5,000. He's not going to be shopping at Next, is he?
Well, speaking of...
Although Next do a good slimline suit.
Speaking of the trousers, I got into my first black cab the other day in months.
Are you not doing Uber anymore?
No, it's just because I couldn't get an Uber.
Just your phone out of battery. It's not something political.
It was, my phone was out of battery. God, I bloody hate black cabs now. I really hate them.
Oh, that's quite bold because, I know. Why do you hate them?
I just can't remember the last time I got into a black cab and the driver hasn't been anything other than surly, sarcastic. This man was very racist. I'm not saying they're all like that, but it's something I'm noticing. There's like a slight...
Oh, no.
Sanctimonious. Yeah, I used to love getting in black cabs, and also I really like supporting black cab drivers. Anyway, back to the trousers. There were some roadworks in Archway. This driver hung his head out of the window and started shouting very Brexity things to the construction workers. And then he said to me, "The country is a state." And I was like, "Oh, God. Is it?" He said, "Yes. And you only have to look at David Cameron's £900 leather trousers to know that." And I just was very lost here. And I just was like, his
what,
leather
had he
trousers.
Read that the Prime Minister wore £900 leather trousers and he just didn't realise that David Cameron had left?
Exactly. So I started Googling David Cameron leather trousers, David Cameron like 900
Ross.
Trousers. Exactly. I was like, how have I missed this?
And did then you tell I realised. Was he embarrassed?
No, I wasn't trying to engage. It was when I was lying in bed afterwards. I was so possessed by this thought. So I just started Googling it. Yeah. And then I realised it was Theresa May and her leather trousers. And look, I'm actually a big fan of...
trousers. Men in leather trousers.
I'm a big fan of Theresa May's point-blank refusal to tone down the way that she dresses. The woman loves fashion, and I really respect that she makes a point of dressing, whether it's leather trousers or those nutty plaid suits, that Vivienne Westwood lucky pantsuit that she wears that I'm completely obsessed with. I really like that she doesn't want to negate her idiosyncrasy with her taste in fashion, and she won't back down. She keeps coming out wearing weird, zany clothes.
It was interesting, in the interview it says that in 2006, which I didn't realise at all, she was photographed wearing a black t-shirt that read, "This is what a feminist looks like," which is funny because obviously 2017, 11 years later, there's a lot of like t-shirts talking about feminism, so she was ahead of the curve with that one. The disappointing thing is she's asked whether she would still call herself a feminist, and the interviewer says she prevaricates. "I haven't thought about that for a very long time," she says with a laugh, which is just nuts because all anyone seems to be talking about or writing about, whether or not it's positive or negative, is feminism. And she's a female.
I think it's completely unacceptable that
she has been accused of obviously not doing nearly enough for women's equality. That said, the interviewer also brought up the subject of salary. It says that she visited an elementary school in Maidenhead and one of the little children said, "How much do you get paid?" And she answered really plainly, "I get paid two salaries. And if you add those two up," I suppose it's public knowledge, "I get about 142,000," she said. I really like it whenever women talk about salaries. They're still, even Dolly and I on our way here were talking about, I asked Dolly because I'm nosy what she got paid for something and she sort of looked at the paper and told me, there's still this idea that we shouldn't talk about salaries. And actually, sod that. The only way we're going to get paid what we should be paid is if you talk about them. And a friend of mine has set up a website, a journalist called Catherine Ormerod, has set up a website called workworkwork.co, talking about women in the workplace and kind of the reality behind the facade in all different aspects of life. And she's written one about money. She's like, no one wants to talk about it. And she says what she's earned at all intervals of her life. And I think it's really brilliant. And I'm so glad she wrote that. Anyway, before we move on, Dolly wants to share her favourite paragraph from the American Vogue interview with Theresa May.
She studied geography at St. Hugh's College, Oxford. Many British politicians have been members of the Oxford Union Debating Society, but May, then Theresa Brazier, was president of its more anarchic sibling, the Edmund Burke Society. It specialised in silliness, but its style could also reportedly be caustic, drunken, parodic and
vituperatively
personal. May presided over proceedings, mad hatter-like, brandishing a meat tenderiser in place of a gavel. What's a gavel?
It's a gavel. It's when you hit order, order.
On one occasion, after she'd graduated and Philip had taken over as president, May returned to speak against the proposition that sex is good but success is better. No one can recall her argument exactly, but she was at least dressed to prove the point, revealing her décolletage in a floor-length red gown that she'd made from a length of satin found in her mother's closet.
Two thoughts on this. A, I love that I had to teach you what several things those was. But also, I think this sounds like you on a Saturday night. I can imagine you in a length of red satin brandishing a meat tenderizer.
You're talking shit, Sykes. On to Ask the High-Low.
Ask the High-Low. Yes, so we've got lots of lovely questions this week. We thought we'd try and answer a few more this week because we didn't get to do as many as we would have liked last week. Dolly, kick us off.
Dear Dolly and Pandora, may I just say that it's such a pleasure to have you both back. Walking around London, I've seen lots of advertisements for the showcase of Princess Diana's fashion story at Kensington Palace. Mm-hmm. I've also been listening to the recent Women's Hour feature on specific pieces and outfits. My boyfriend commented how he was annoyed that Diana's legacy had been reduced to her wardrobe. He argued that her humanitarian career was seemingly diminished by our continual celebration of her style and beauty. I countered that part of Diana's mythic appeal was her ability to mix glamour, royal duty, female sexuality and aid work. Mm. Her wardrobe means far more than just her image. It is a statement of a subtle rebellion against the institutionalized repression and tension within the monarchy. In short, she was a bloody icon. I was wondering what you thought about Britain and the world's affection for Princess Di and her style. Are we reducing her memory to her clothes, which were often made for her and put upon her?
Very interesting. I think leaving aside what we think about Britain and its affection for Princess Di, because I feel like that's a whole different story about how we kind of treat icons when they when they die. I think it really resonates with the Theresa May topic. I think you're absolutely right. Her image was very much part of her mythic appeal. She
exactly.
took great enjoyment designing her dresses
and
with people
loved
like
fashion.
Norman Hartnell. Yes, if you read any of those pieces around the exhibition, you know, she spent a great deal of time making up these dresses, enjoying wearing them. And, you know, I'm no Princess Di, but I take great enjoyment in my wardrobe. And I don't think I'd be remotely offended if anyone wanted to celebrate me for my great fashion choices. So I think you're right. I think that, you know, if you're doing humanitarian, it's like the Amal Clooney. This is literally like what we've just been talking about. Mm. It's as long as it doesn't negate your efforts elsewhere. And I actually think it's fucking great that your boyfriend's the one questioning how we're seeing a woman in her wardrobe. I like this. We should have more men questioning the viewpoint through which we see women. Next question. My question concerns baby showers. I have been struggling to get pregnant for years and have recently been through two emotional rounds of IVF. I'm so sorry. I know a lot of friends going through that. Today I received a baby shower invite from someone I barely know, a friend of a friend who I see twice a year at social events. Long story short, I know she knows about my IVF. I've been keeping it together for the most part. I've been depressed, scared, hugely emotional. This baby shower invite really upsets me. Why would she invite an acquaintance who just suffered a failed IVF to her baby shower, then send a list of suitable gifts for everyone to purchase? Am I being insensitive or is this the norm?
I'm a bit in two minds about this, I think. First of all, I think baby showers are sort of a crock of shit in terms of asking, unless you're financially struggling, in which case I completely understand why you would ask for some help from your friends and your friends would be willing to help. I just think if someone wants to get presents for your baby and, you know, that should be their choice. So I understand why that might be slightly grating. I think it's hard because I understand that you must be in immense pain. But I think if this person isn't your close friend and they're just a friend of a friend, perhaps they don't know the extent of the pain that you're going through. And perhaps they thought it would make more of a point if they didn't invite you.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that I know from having been in a situation where I have pussyfooted around something, perhaps, and not had the conversation or not extended an invite, and someone has said, you know, just treat me normally.
Yes.
Like, stop, you know, don't treat me like the actual elephant in the room. So I think she was actually probably trying to make sure that you still felt included, even though you were going through something that was topically very painful.
Yeah.
The other, you know, really painful thing is, and I see this with friends who get engaged whilst other friends have just broken up with their other half, is that unfortunately life goes on for other people. And whilst they may empathise hugely, that can't stop the big life changes.
Exactly,
that
and
they
it won't
are going
be
through.
It won't be the centre of their world.
So if
it may be the centre of yours, understandably.
I think if it was me in your position, I would probably send a message saying thank you for inviting me. But as you may have heard, I'm going through some very painful personal stuff with trying to start my own family and I think it would be too hard for me to come. And I think they would understand that.
But sending you huge amounts of love and support, because obviously that's a very difficult thing to be going through.
Absolutely. Next question, Dolly.
I'm writing on behalf of all my best friends because we are, as Dolly would say, obsessed with your podcast.
Thanks.
I have so many questions for the high-low. Firstly, Dolly, do you feel like it's okay to wear heels regularly? I'm 5'10" and I feel like a giant walking around the place with my normal sized friends. Secondly, my friend wants to know, how do you deal with errant cheek hairs or chin
that
hair removers?
That must be for me, right? Is the hair facial hair remover of the room.
Are chin hair removers suitable for cheek hairs? Should she just get laser hair removal? Much love from Dublin, anonymous.
Wow, I don't know. I've never experienced like cheek hair aside from just the soft down. No, I don't think you have to get special tools for each different part of your body.
Just tweeze.
You'd have a whole toolbox.
Yeah.
I just tweeze. If it's good enough for the chin, it's good enough for the cheek. And Dolly, I know that you wear high heels, but do you have any tall lady words of wisdom?
I would say that it... the thing that you have to deal with, I don't really mind looking like, all my friends are very petite, so I just look like Gandalf and the Hobbit whenever I'm out on a Saturday night with my mates and I'm in heels. I don't really mind that. They don't really mind that. And if you're fine with that and it makes you feel empowered and it makes you feel beautiful, then you should bloody wear what you want. All I would say is you will have stupid men coming up to you and telling you you're tall all the time.
Don't you get people walking down the road just going, you're tall?
I had a man lean out of a car in Hampstead High Street the other day and shout, tall, at me. And then he slowed up towards traffic lights. So he had to stop at traffic lights.
And did you just look at him?
And I walked past him and I just went, you're in a smart car, mate.
Did
like
you?
That. And he just looked straight ahead. but what I would say is you are going to have men come up and say that to you. And sometimes I'm ready to face that head on. Sometimes my friends are vying for a fight and they're totally happy to be my little army against men that are saying that stuff to me. And sometimes I cannot be asked for men to be making me feel self-conscious and coming up to me and pestering me all night about how tall I am, so I don't wear them, which is sad. But sometimes you just want to have a drink and not have to deal with a load of burks. So it depends what mindset you're in, I would say.
Another question about writing a book. I'm having a first world problem in that I'm trying to write a book. I've essentially developed and written it all in my head, where it sounds pretty great. And on a good day, I've even picked out the actors for the screen adaptation.
Oh, yeah.
I work full time, so evenings and weekends are the only time I have to write. But when I sit down, there's nothing. God, I know that feeling. Why am I struggling to sit down? I really want to write it, but nothing appears. Love, Nicole, your lone Texan listener. More on that shortly, because we have found out where we only have one listener. Anyway, Dolly, you will sympathise with the book writing, I think, more than I could.
Yes, the thing that I would say is, first of all, my heart goes out for you. Both Pandora and I for years had full-time jobs and we were doing freelancing in the evenings and the weekends, and it's a fucking knackering thing to do. The best thing that I can do to really get some great ideas and some brilliant inspiration is I plug myself into some lovely music. Classical music's quite good, actually, or something without lyrics, jazz music, something that kind of can let your mind go more into the middle distance and kind of go into deeper parts of your consciousness, and put your phone on airplane mode and go for a really long walk.
Yeah, I love putting my phone on airplane.
Go for a really long walk somewhere beautiful. Go Hampstead Heath or Richmond Park and go for a 2
she lives in Texas.
No, she's in London. She's a Texan in London. I think you'll be amazed at all the stuff that will start rising up to the top of your mind, and then go straight home, sit down with a notepad or a laptop and just start scribbling.
A notepad, adorable. Do you write your book in a notepad?
I have a notepad full of ideas. I often will go for a long walk, come back, write everything down as a brain dump in a notepad, then wake up the next morning and read it and write.
Yeah, it's always good to have notepad by your bed.
Yes, that's a very good
tip. I used to send myself emails all the time, but then I have to go into my sent folder and move them from my sent folder to my inbox, otherwise it's just lost, that reminder.
Do you ever do something that I've noticed I do, which is a bit sad, is if I have to email myself something, I sign off with a kiss?
That's sweet. Self-love, it's very important, Dolly. Right,
sad.
Last question. Let's read out the last question.
Hi, Dolly and Pandora. After being single for just over 2 years now and have met a long list of beautiful boys loaded with issues and who treated me crappy or were unavailable for anything meaningful, I've recently met a guy who likes me very much and is open and forthright about his intentions with me and the way he feels. However, and here's where I might sound like a bit of an asshole, he isn't the most attractive guy. I like his company, but I'm about 50% attracted to him. Do you think it would grow over time? I don't want to miss out on a great partner over something so superficial. Pandy.
I think that you can't make yourself be sexually attracted to someone. So if you think there's potential for that side to grow, then hang out for a bit, see what happens. But if you're really not attracted to someone, there's no point forcing it just because you feel like you should be with people that are less attractive because they might be nicer.
No, you should never be with someone just because they're nice to you. I think that is indicative of having a very rocky past with men. What I would say is there's something very different between being attractive and being good looking. So it doesn't matter if this man isn't good. How you physically look really means, like, seriously means fuck all, seriously. If he is attractive, if he carries himself with confidence and he's funny and he's kind and he's intelligent and he's sexy, then it really doesn't matter how he looks physically. But the point is, if you're just not feeling an attraction, as Pandora says, you can't ignore that. That's the thing that differentiates friendship and romance, and sexual attraction is a very, very important part of a relationship.
Thank you very much to Wise Buddha for letting us use their studios to record the High Low
and we'd
today.
Also like to applaud them on their unconventional spelling of Buddha that we noticed today.
Yes, we want to know if it's a deliberate spelling.
Apparently on purpose.
But we were trying to work out if it was like an acronym or something.
But well done, it's pretty funky.
It's very funky. Thank you to everyone who tweeted us. Please do tweet us your thoughts on today's episode at The High Low Show. You can also email us, thehighlowshow@gmail.com.
And to finish on a fun fact.
A great fun fact, thanks to Charlie, our producer.
The top three countries we are listened to, we found out what countries we're listened to the most.
And Charlie, our producer, also found out the places where we only have one listener because he thought this was quite entertaining, and he's right. I love that we have lone listeners in these countries.
So coming in at number one, we have the UK, then US, then Ireland, then Australia, then France, Germany, Canada and Spain.
And where do we have one listener?
We have one listener in Bangladesh, Botswana, Kazakhstan, El Salvador, the Cayman Islands and Gambia.
I love this.
So
shout out to this one listener.
To all our one listeners representing a whole country.
I wonder if it's a friend of ours who just hasn't told us that he or she has been to business and all of those places.
Yeah, I think that's much more likely.
But I absolutely love that we have one lone listener in El Salvador or Bangladesh. Thank you very much. Bring a pal, make it two. Thank you very much for listening. Speak to you next week.
Bye.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code Program.